is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Kathleen Dunn. Women for Women International works with socially excluded women in eight countries where war and conflict have devastated lives and communities. Each of the women served has her own story, some of loved ones murdered, others of physical and emotional trauma, and most have endured a struggle for survival. The women enroll in a very intensive one-year program. They learn job skills and receive business training so they can earn a living, and they come to understand their rights in their communities and in their nations. Many of them work collaboratively because they see the value of community, and many of them become leaders. Women are matched with a global network of sponsors who provide monthly financial assistance and emotional support. These are small stipends that allow a woman to cover basic necessities for herself and her family. And the sponsors also give letters of support, providing what's really an emotional lifeline to a woman who may have lost everything due to war or conflict. We have two guests with us this hour to talk about this highly interesting and extremely effective program. Judith Regist is here. She is the Director of Development and Outreach for Woman to Woman. She has spent a number of years, over 10 years, field experience living and working in conflict, post-conflict, and developing countries, including Rwanda, Sudan, South Africa, and the Democratic Republic of Congo, where she established the Women for Women International DRC office. Later this hour, Joe Schmidt will join us, who is a Women for Women International sponsor sister and is from the state of Wisconsin. We'll be welcoming phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Judith, thank you very much for being with us.
Good morning, Kathleen. Thank you for having me.
Please tell me how such a very interesting program got started. Who had this great idea?
Well, our founder, Zainab Salbi, who founded the organization back in 1993, was a very young Iraqi-born American who just came to the United States, learned about what was going on in the Bosnia at the time, where these camps essentially, as is the case in many conflict zone, where refugee camps, or what is called refugee camps, are established, and essentially they become rape camps. Whether it's, you know, the conditions of the camp that forces, you know, what we call rape and atrocities, and whether in the case of Bosnia, these camps were essentially designed to, you know, rape women. And so the organization was founded as a response to the situation in the Bosnia. And from Bosnia, the program grew. We moved on to establish an office in Kosovo, which were experiencing similar issues. And went on to establish offices in Nigeria and Rwanda after the 1994 genocide, Sudan, South Sudan, where we have an office, Iraq, Afghanistan, and recently, you know, South Sudan and the Democratic Republic of Congo. So a program, I think, as you well described, it's really a response to help women who are in the process of rebuilding their lives. And when we talk about war and conflict and the experience and atrocities that women all face, we're not just talking about the loss of loved ones. We're talking about the complete, you know, stripping of a woman's dignity as a result of being raped. And I don't think there's anything worse that can happen to someone when you've been raped.
Please.
So that was really the history of the organization. And today we've served over 300,000 women across the different countries where we operate.
My, that is just remarkable. Please tell me the depth of the problem with rape and why it is so prevalent. I have never fully understood that. Maybe nobody can ever fully understand that, but why is it so prevalent?
You know, it's a very interesting question and a very valuable one. And I think if you look at, I mean, as of recent, I think the issue of rape has been sort of like more prevalent and more visible. With the globalization of media and communication, we know more and more about it. But rape and conflict, in the history of conflict and war, rape have always been a tool, whether it's been explicit in terms of the way it's being described in the context of Congo and other countries. It's something that historically we don't have as much data to sort of say, you know, with the development of more technology and development of more communication, we know it's done in a way that's more hideous than it's ever been before. There's rape and there's torture. And I think what we're talking about as a recent history, it's not just rape, it's the complete desolation of this woman. And essentially, the reason it's been done, and it was done in World War II and various war in history, you will find rape have always been a consistent marker of the society. And the reason, essentially, in any community, any context, you know, that women are the glue that keeps the society together. And if you fundamentally say you're part of the enemy, you want to completely destroy the society, the best way to do it, essentially, is to, you know, destroy the women. And I think for that reason, we've seen rape become more and more of a practice, but not just in a way that women are raped, but in the way women are tortured to the extent that they can no longer function, you know, as human beings because of the format and context and how they are raped and the number of people who rape them and the tools that is used to rape them.
So you're dealing with women who literally have nothing. They don't have jobs. They may have children. They've been physically tortured and abused, and they have nowhere to go. I mean, you have to really rebuild a life.
Yes, essentially that's what we're talking about here. And in the context where you work, it's not just that they have nothing. Nothing exists. They have to create something. And part of what we do is to help them create something out of the little that exists in the environment that it exists. But, you know, I think what's always been interesting for me working in these environments and places where you see so much darkness, you think there is nothing that can exist, is the places where people find, have the greatest hope. And they can essentially, and I don't think if it's the, you know, if it's what it is for us as human beings to create, to recreate and reinvent ourselves when we feel like we're gonna, we're dying. And I think you see that. You see the woman sort of like, you know, I had this experience talking to a woman after doing an interview, and she was extremely optimistic after she lost her husband. Her home was burnt alive. Her mother was burnt alive in the home, and her children were forced to rape her, but they refused to. She had two sons, and they killed the son. And I'm sitting here talking to her, and this all happened on a morning, and I'm talking to her. And she was still so hopeful and optimistic. And I looked at her and I said, well, how can you be still so hopeful and optimistic after everything you've experienced? And she looked at me. She's like, how can I not be hopeful and optimistic? Because that I'm alive, that means, you know, we can do something so that the generation coming after us can live in a world that is more peaceful and more prosperous.
And in many cases, tell me about the support. I was interested in the women who decide to work collectively as a result of being in this program, the support that they're receiving from strangers who live in other countries who are giving them support, and the support that they receive from each other.
So I think, you know, the most fascinating component of the program is the sponsorship program. The sponsorship program, both with the women from around the world, primarily in the U.S., who sponsor the women, and the sponsorship and the sisterhood that is established within the group themselves when they come together. One of the things that happen in context of conflict and post-conflict environment is that people, even though they've experienced the same thing, there is this sense of isolation. Everyone feels like, I'm the only one this has happened to, and I cannot talk about it because of the shame associated with it. When the women come to the program in group of 25, it becomes a circle. I call it a circle of healing. Because through the program, through the discussion, they come to talk about various things that, not necessarily the atrocity that they experience, just life. The aspiration, the goals, they come to laugh together, they talk about various issues. And through the process, they come to realize and share things that they wouldn't have thought of sharing before. And through that process, they become not just friends, but, you know, they become some sort of connectors. And because they understand that the atrocity they've experienced, they are not alone. And so these women become a support network to each other. But just not, and they take it from, they move it from the emotional support, and a big part of what we do is to help women because bread and butter issues are a key component of survival. You know, you can talk about politics, you can talk about development. If people are not able to eat, they can't move on to the next stage. And so part of the program is to help women come together, not only to rebuild their own sort of like social fabric, but to rebuild their lives economically. And so through the learning of economic development, they come to understand the power of a circle, the power of two is stronger than the power of one. So then they begin to actually mobilize their resources together into what we call cooperative, where they put together the small funding they receive on a regular basis, where they built a small group of community where they grow their businesses together. Sometimes they actually loan one another. Every month somebody would, you know, the group would actually put their money together and they would loan one woman. So the following month, another woman would get loaned from 25 women. So that by the time the end of the year comes, they are able to actually support each other, not only emotionally, but economically. Sending their kids to school, hiring a teacher to actually help educate the kids, you know. They just become to build that small community. And I think if you think about your question earlier about why women are raped, again, when you can rebuild that social fabric in terms of helping women rebuild their lives, you then rebuild that community.
Mm-hmm. We are going to meet one of the sponsors who is from Wisconsin. This is a program that some of you listening may be interested in and may be interested in becoming a sponsor yourself. They're doing really extraordinary work, and as you can hear, with women who have just totally reached the bottom in every possible way, who've been physically raped and who've been in war-torn situations and very poor countries as well, with some absolutely astounding, some might say miraculous, success stories. Joe Schmidt is a Women for Women International sponsor sister from Wisconsin. She's a Wisconsin native, and she has helped more than 9 sponsor sisters through the Women for Women International in the past 66 years, including women who are living in Iraq, Kosovo, and Rwanda. Joe, thank you very much for being with us. Tell me who you've sponsored and how you even decided to do this program. It's such, I don't think it's very well known, but what a meaningful program.
For me, it was kind of like the perfect storm. I went in 2004 and saw the movie Hotel Rwanda,
mm-hmm.
and that was on a Sunday afternoon. See how well I remember this? It truly was. On a Sunday afternoon, I came out of there into the bright sunlight. And, you know, people all around me heading out to dinner, doing this, doing that, doing other things. And I thought, you know, and I kept thinking about these women in Rwanda and other countries like that. And I went home, and a couple of days later I was watching Oprah, and she had a program about Women for Women on. And then I went to the computer, and I signed up, and my first sponsored sister was in Rwanda. And at that time, which was several years ago now, you exchanged letters. And everything was done in paper. Now they have the organization has a wonderful website and system where sponsors can communicate electronically and with their sisters. So I sent off a letter signed up to sponsor and got the information about my first sister. She was a young woman in Rwanda. It came with a picture of her, and it was a black and white picture of a woman who looked like she had just, you know, been destroyed, just totally, you know, she was a walking corpse. She was a walking dead person. And, I put that picture up in my office and just saw it there. And I sent off these letters, and every once in a while I would get a letter back from her that had been translated by the folks at Women for Women. And then at the end of her year, I got this picture, and it was this photograph of her, and she was, her hair was done. It was in color, and she was smiling, and she was sitting at a sewing machine with fabric around her, and, you know, yes, I had finished the program, and look what I'm doing. And I mean, it was just, it would bring tears to your eyes today to see those two pictures and the difference. And I was hooked. I mean, I saw that I had made a difference in this woman's life. And, you know, people are always, I want to say this, Kathleen, because people are always suspicious about these things where, you know, you're getting the letters back from and so forth. And, oh, somebody's just, you know, doing that, and it's generic, and they're not really, you know, you're not really getting a letter from this woman. But you are, because the sisters I would get letters from, there would be something in there that was about what I had said to them in a letter I had sent to them.
Mm.
So I knew they were getting the letters. I knew the program was working, And I just thought it was so, so important. This morning, I just got the email that said that my latest sister, who is in Iraq, is graduating at the end of February. And so I sent off a note to her congratulating her and telling her how proud I was of her and so forth. So that can all be done now electronically.
And what exactly does it mean to be a sponsor? Are you giving small amounts of money as well to help with the start of a business?
No, I'm giving a monthly stipend, and it's so easy. I mean, it's just deducted from my Visa bill. Mm-hmm. And that, my understanding is that money is for her. In this case, the woman I'm sponsoring in Iraq has 7 children, and she's somewhere around in her early 50s. And my understanding is that money is for her to be able to sustain her family while she's going through this program.
I see.
And so when the year ends, then I will get, at the end of February, I will get a new sister and get the information about her and start communicating with her and so forth.
And you have sponsored 9 sisters?
Yes.
From where?
Iraq, Kosovo, and Rwanda. I usually would say, you know, when they would say, you know, when you filled out the thing and said, where do you want to sponsor, I would usually say where the need was greatest. After we went to war in Iraq, I was like, come on, folks, you know, and we've got to do something that's positive rather than, you know, going and rattling our sabers. And so I specifically asked for Iraq. And the first sister I had in Iraq, the situation over there was so terrible that she could not be identified to me, and my letters all had to go through the organization in D.C. You know, they had to get them to her somehow. I couldn't go to—I mean, you don't go directly to her. You send everything to Women for Women, but it was very clear to me that this woman was in danger, and that if somebody found out that she was receiving this training and this money and so forth, that she would be in trouble. And that's changed with this latest sister from Iraq who, you know, I'm very openly able to send her a letter today to say, well, Judith may correct me here, but my understanding is that things have changed enough that we can be open about this with the sisters in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to the extent, I mean, I just wanted to clarify, we can be open to the to some extent, because I think the security situation in Iraq, we're still very careful not to put the women that we serve in any danger.
Mm-hmm.
Previously, we weren't able to exchange any letters at all, but now we're able to exchange letters, which has been some progress, which has been meaningful progress for us.
You mentioned the 300,000 women you are serving, Judith. How many women are sponsors, and are they from all over the world?
They're from all over the world, but primarily the U.S. I think over 90% of our sponsors are coming from the United States. You know, since we've been operational in 1993, we've served 315,000 women, and out of those, some 40,000 sponsors annually. And we're talking about an annual sponsorship program of 40,000. Some people leave, some people stay, like Joe here, stay with us consistently over the years. And so I say it's one of the most important, what I call it, like, you know, philanthropic, grassroots philanthropy, because I think when you read, and especially with the current situation going on in Iraq, Afghanistan, Congo, often if you're the average person who really cares and wants to do something about the other side of the world, you don't understand the political discussion, you don't understand the strategy of war, and really all this policy discussion can be very confusing, even for someone who's well-versed on the discussion. And you have the mass of people, I think, with a good heart, which is what makes this country a beautiful country. You have a very strong tradition of philanthropy, and people want to do something. And what the sponsorship program does, it offers people an opportunity to make a contribution beyond sort of like the political discourse around what
Yes.
the administration is doing, but what can you do? Because what's often missing in the discussion around in the media is what is happening to the average person living in those countries? How are they surviving day to day, particularly women? Because in many of those contexts, regardless of what happened, women are still responsible to taking care of the family, taking care of the children. No matter what happened, what conditions they are in, it is still their responsibilities. And how can we help them through that process? In doing so, it's really helping rebuild these countries.
It's remarkable, and there are a lot of people with good hearts. I would imagine that you, Joe, have inspired others to become sponsors as well.
I talk about it everywhere. I mean, I just, I just I'll say to somebody, okay, for what you're spending on coffee every week, you could be in a week, you could be sponsoring a woman that month. You know, for what, if you go to Starbucks every day and get your $4 latte or whatever, you could be, you know, over a month's time, you could be sponsoring a woman somewhere and making a difference in her life. I thought about it that day, the day I came out of the movie. I mean, I wasn't to Women for Women yet, but I thought about, I've just spent, you know, whatever it was at that time in 2004 to go to a movie. I'm going to dinner. I'll probably do some shopping, and in 24 hours here, I'm going to spend $50, let's
right.
say. And for stuff I didn't need, mm-hmm. and for stuff I didn't have to have, and she has nothing. And I can make, you know, I talk to people about, this is an organization where you can see the results of what you're doing. You know, there are many, many good organizations, but here, when you give money for research, for example, medical research, that's a long, long way off, and it's a real future thing. Here, you are taking a woman's life and making a real difference in it in 1 year. 1 year. It's just, to me, it's just like, unbelievable.
Oh, I can hear it in your voice. We welcome phone calls for both our guests. We're talking about Women to Women International. You get an idea, a pretty strong idea of the kind of work that they're doing, the remarkable work they're doing in countries that have had wars and have post-conflict issues, developing countries like Rwanda, Sudan, South Africa, Iraq, Democratic Republic of Congo, Afghanistan. Here is our phone number. Maybe there is another sponsor out there listening, or some of you may be so motivated, or you have questions about what happens in the course of a year. Is it unrealistic to think you can turn somebody's life around in the course of a year? And what about the danger that was mentioned? Let's talk more about that. Is it dangerous for women in these areas to be members of such a program? And how does the organization deal with the danger, the inherent danger of changing your life? Because you're also changing your society as well, and some people don't want that to happen. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our guests are Judith Rajist, Director of Development and Outreach for Women to Women, an expert in international economic development, who has many years of field experience, who has worked in many of these countries. Joe Schmidt, a Wisconsin native, who has helped more than 9 sisters through Women to Women International in the past 6 years. We welcome your phone calls and your emails, too. That's talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tomorrow during this time period, Bob Berman will be joining us. He's become one of our favorite astronomers in the past few months. He has a book on the sun. It's titled The Sun's Heartbeat and Other Stories from the Life of the Star That Powers Our Planet. It's really a biography of the sun from its stellar birth to its spectacular future death. That's coming up tomorrow during this hour. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. We're talking about Women to Women International, and we're welcoming your phone calls. We start calls with Linda in Spring Green. Hi, Linda. Hi, Linda. Are you there?
Claire.
Yes, go right ahead, Linda. Well, I don't know where you are, Linda, but you need to listen to us and not to the radio. We do, before we go back to phone calls, have several people who wanted to have a website address to get, because you're motivating people to find out more right away. Judith, how do people get more information? You have a good website.
Yes, please. You can check our website. It's Women for Women, womenforwomen.org. womenforwomen.org.
Okay. And there you can get all the information.
And also you can check us on Facebook. We have a Facebook fan page.
Oh, you do?
Yes.
I love Facebook.
Fantastic.
We'll put, yeah.
Check us on Facebook.
All right. We will do that. We'll check you on Facebook. And we'll go to, if you're familiar with our Facebook page, we'll put a link after the show to our Facebook page as well. The number is 800-486-8655. A lot of calls are coming in while Rhonda is getting to them. Let's talk, Judith, about some of the inherent dangers that Joe mentioned. There are certain people who have holds on power and don't want things to change. You're involved in a fairly radical process here of getting women who have been raped, who have been victims in so many ways of war and conflict, to really take a hold of their lives and change their society. How do you deal with the inherent danger involved in that?
You know, that's a very good question. And these issues, we get this question asked a lot. And I'll tell you a couple of things. One is, Amado is very unique in terms of our approach and strategy, and none of the countries where we work and operate do we have expatriates running and operating the program. Even when we work in a rural area, we try to identify people from that area who understand and know the context to actually work in the environment. What does that do? It's important to highlight that as an international organization. What it does is, in a sense, that it's not people who don't understand the context, the culture nuances that are operating and delivering the program, which means in any context where we work, say, I live in Washington, D.C., someone living in New York, the contextual issues are very different, and someone needs to be familiar with the context to actually avert some of the potential challenges. And so what we do in those environments, we don't sort of like, it's not an explicit, like, you know, this is what we're going to do. The women understand very well the cultural nuances and work within the cultural nuances. It's not what I call, it's not rocket scientists, but if you actually approach any issue in the right way, you can actually get the right result. Mm-hmm. In no way am I saying this is kind of like perfect all the time. We have challenges, but we understand very well we must work with the men in the communities. We have a men's leadership program. We're in Afghanistan and DRC working on issues impacting women, targeting men who are leaders in the communities, because we know and understand very well people with influence have great power to actually change others' mind. And so we work within the context, identifying where are the leverages of influence, and we tap into those leverages of influence. And men community leaders are key in that process. And we've been very strategic to engage them as champion, as advocates for these issues, because at the end of the day, these are issues that impact people's day-to-day reality, and we help them understand that in a very key and critical way, and that, I think, is where we've actually had really good success in addressing some of those issues.
Mm. Linda, hi, you're on the air.
Yes, hi, good morning. My daughter is serving on a missions trip. It's called the World Race, and I have just become very much involved with what is happening in our world. So I want to know, can I be a one-time donor, or does one sign up for a monthly commitment that would last through the year? And I would like to know the amount, if possible. And Joe, would she be able to put an email or something on Facebook so that I can communicate with her in Wisconsin? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Linda. Joe?
Well, I don't do Facebook. I'd be happy to exchange email addresses if she wants to. Yes, you can do a one-time donation. You just go to the website, and it's right there for you to do. And at Christmas time this year, I had some business gifts that I needed to give, and they had this wonderful program where I was able to give a sewing machine as one gift, and I didn't actually give the sewing machine. It was just I gave enough money for there to be a sewing machine. I'm a writer, so I gave books for one gift, and that again was not a real gift of books, but money for education and books, which that was a wonderful program, and I just really appreciated that so much.
What kind of writing do you do, Joe?
I do women's fiction, and I write under the name of Anna Schmidt.
Oh, wonderful. And can you give us an idea of how much people contribute? Is it a fixed amount from month to month?
Yes, it is.
And it's
Judith, help me. I don't.
Yeah, it's about $30 a month. If you're choosing to sponsor a woman, it's about $30 a month. If you're choosing to make a one-time donation, it can range anywhere from $100,000 to $100,000. It's up to your means and capacities.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you. I don't know if we're going to be able to accomplish email-to-email addresses here because I see that as problematic, but Rhonda will help me figure something out here so you can be in touch with each other. And let's go to Connie from Arcadia. Hi.
Hi. A couple of years ago, I had the privilege of hearing someone speak. Her name was Zainab Salbi, and my understanding was that she was a founder of this organization. And I think the organization is Women for Women rather than Women to Women.
Yes, it's Women for Women. I said it incorrectly. Women for Women. Yes.
And I'm wondering if I'm remembering that correctly. Is there someone of that name associated with this group?
Yes, the founder, as I mentioned in my earlier talk, the founder, yes, you're correct, Zainab Salbi is the founder of the organization.
Wonderful. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, sure. Connie. Thanks for the call. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And Linda, if you call back, Rhonda will take your call and can give you information on Joe's email just so we can do that somewhat privately. We have lines open, and also the email is available for you. Women for Women is what we're talking about this hour of the program. I'd like to hear more, please, Judith, about what actually happens in the course of a year, how you are able to change people's lives. What do the women do on a day-to-day basis?
I will start by saying a couple of things. I think one of the reasons the program is successful, it has the impact that it has, is because people have, you know, it's always hard to actually merge desire with resources and willingness with resources. You have a great deal of willingness and desire for change in those environments, not enough resources. So what the program does is actually match the desire and people have to change their lives by providing them an extra push. The program has a three-pronged approach. We do a rights awareness education program, which is kind of really more about opening the mind, understanding of one's society. We look at things like women's rights in the Constitution. Now, war and conflict, despite all that it is and all the atrocity, post-conflict actually create a window of opportunities for changes and opportunities for women that didn't exist before. And so we help women to understand what are the legal protection, where it exists or where it doesn't exist. We look at things like land rights, inheritance rights, which are very, very big and critical issues, agriculture development. So we give a full-fledged education, basically things that are valuable for people's day-to-day life. We say it's practical, not just theoretical. In addition to that, we do vocational training skills, technical training skills to help them gain a skill that they can essentially use either to create a job themselves in where it's possible to actually connect with employers that can hire them to train skills. Like, for example, we have a partnership with Kate Spade, New York, where a selected group of women are producing knits like hats, gloves, scarves that is being sold at the Kate Spade store in New York. So that's one example. We, in the process of establishing a similar, we actually have established a similar relationship for Afghanistan and work in close coordination with the State Department and Kate Spade and Women for Women. Now, all of these things basically trying to help someone who's been through a great deal of atrocity not only understand what is her current reality, but what are the possibilities and opportunities that exist, and how did they get access to those resources? So our big model is access to knowledge plus access to resources equals lasting change. One without the other doesn't actually create the lasting change that is necessary.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really the way we've actually been able to achieve the impact we've been achieved. Is 1 year long enough? We could work. Actually, we could do it longer. And so we're trying to introduce opportunities to provide graduate services to the participants. More can be done, but that 1 year we are able to achieve as much as possible with the resources that we have.
And when you say inheritance rights are a big issue, is this that women are not aware of inheritance that may be coming their way, or you have to change what the inheritance pattern may be in a country? Fill me in more.
Both. I mean, in many countries, women are not really allowed to inherit anything. Mm-hmm. So while the constitutions may actually, while a post-conflict constitution may actually create those rights, it doesn't necessarily mean culturally those rights are respected. So there's a constant battle between reconciling the constitutional rights that exist for women in many societies and the cultural rights that prevent those rights to be practiced. And so to the extent that part of our work with the men's leaders in the communities and working with other partners in the communities, because we also work in partnership to deliver our services and help women get access to other services that we do not provide, is that a woman who's lost her husband, and very often when the husband isn't lost, the man is actually the one that has the rights to these properties. So what we do around these issues is to help the woman understand what rights they have, and if they wanted to actually access those rights in terms of inheriting their properties, like land rights is a big issue because women live on the land in many of the contexts where we work because of the extreme poverty level, you know, agriculture is a big part. And so we help them understand what are the rights that exist and how they can get access to it. But we also try to connect them to institutions, sometimes local government resources that can help them tap into those rights and inherit those properties that they may have. Now, in no way are these things very easy and simple because, as I described to you earlier, the reconciliation between cultural rights, which are the things that women's, you know, women's lives are shaped by the culture much more so than the formal rights that exist in society. So what we try to do is really try to help them to understand that and tap to resources to get them have access to those things.
We welcome more phone calls. We're talking about Women for Women International this hour of the program, and we have two guests with us, the Director of Development and Outreach, who's an expert in international economic development, human rights, and gender equality, and women's empowerment, who has spent, Judith Regist, over 10 years in field experience in countries like Rwanda, Sudan, South Africa, the Democratic Republic of Congo. Also joining us is Wisconsin native Joe Schmidt, who's a writer who, as you heard her say, saw the movie some years ago, Hotel Rwanda, and it stayed with her. And then she heard about this on the Oprah show and became involved and has helped more than 9 sponsor sisters through this program in the last 6 years. Here's our number, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Women for Women International is what we're talking about this hour, a nonprofit organization providing women in war-torn regions the skills training that is needed to rebuild their lives. They operate in 8 countries, and they are working with some 300,000 women, and the women have sponsors, many, most of whom are in the United States. It's a year-long program in which the women, in many cases, have to completely rebuild their lives. 800-486-8655 is the number. Anita in Gurnee, Illinois. Hi, Anita.
Hi. I wanted to tell you about something, and I'm going off the road here on purpose. Okay, there we go.
Okay, thank you.
Anyway, I want to tell you about something, and I have a quick question. A few years ago, we've been supporters of Women for Women International ever since we saw a presentation on Oprah.
Oh.
And, you know, the thing that my girlfriends and I got together and said was, if women don't help women, who will? And so, at any rate, what we decided was that our stage of life, we really don't need to be buying each other sweaters and trinkets and all of this for Christmas. So what we do every year is we pool our money that we would have spent on our Christmas gifts, and we put it together, and we send it to Women for Women International. And they allow you to specify, you know, which category, educational, sewing machines, whatever. And we do that, and then we hug each other and say, Merry Christmas. It's just what I wanted.
Hmm.
So anyway, this is, but we're following the example of them because those women are working together, and that's what we're doing, and we're so privileged to be able to do that. My question is, does Women for Women International work with other groups which also help women in third world countries and situations like that? For instance, the shops that are called 10,000 Villages. Do some of the women that are being helped by Women for Women International, does Women for Women International then contact them to distribute goods? Do they work together? I just was curious.
Okay, and thank you so much, Anita.
Thank you you, Anita, for your question. I mean, a big part of what we do in every country where we work is work in partnership. For example, issues like HIV/AIDS, health, after you've been raped, these are big issues. So we work with groups like Médecins Sans Frontières, Doctors Without Borders, and to try and deliver services. Our Paul Farmer's group, we work with them in Rwanda, for example, to help them deliver services to that we don't deliver, that are when the women need direct health services. So, yes, a big part of what we do is that. For example, we're also working with 10,000 Women Initiative, which is the Goldman Sachs initiative, to identify women who've actually passed that stage. Because the group of women we work at, if you think of the pyramid, they are at the bottom of the pyramid. As they move their way up, they need additional services to actually help them not only expand their small businesses, but potentially they can hire other women. So we actually do that to enable our program to have the impact, because these issues are so vast and there are so many complexities around it that we can't do it alone. We recognize that. And so a big part of what we do in every country where we work is to identify opportunities where it exists to actually partner so that the women can get the services that they so desperately need.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, Anita, for your call. Jill mentioned seeing the film Hotel Rwanda. Obviously, she needed to see that because art can sometimes motivate us to do big things in our lives. You've worked in Rwanda. Can you tell us a bit about how things may have improved there, Judith, and the work specifically that has been done for Women for Women in Rwanda?
You know, I think Rwanda is one of the most fascinating countries growing up right now in the world, whether you're talking about Africa or globally. I first started working there in 2002, and I've been going there every year, religiously at least twice a year. And I can tell you, in terms of economic progress, infrastructure development, you know, you have places, you have hotels like Marriott opening hotels there. So tourism is growing, the coffee industry is growing. So the government of Rwanda has successfully made significant progress. And when you look at the issues of women's empowerment, women's political participation, they are highest among the highest in the world in terms of number, over 50% of women in parliament. So there's been a clear commitment and determination to actually, develop the country, and you can see it visibly. You can see it visibly in terms of the roads, in terms of the hotels, in terms of the homes that are being built. And, you know, I think we want to talk more about that in terms of what are some of the progress that are being made, and women having more access to health facilities, because the government have health programs that, you know, with, say, a dollar, they subsidize it, but, you know, you require to actually pay something into it. The women in our program using the fund that they receive through the sponsorship to actually purchase health insurance for women, for themselves and their family. I think it's one of the countries where most people have access to basic health care on the continent. So the country has made significant progress. Poverty is still an issue, obviously, and poverty as it regards to women is still a big issue they still need to overcome. But I believe over time, if the pace of economic development that's been taking place, that's been going on for the past 10 years, continues, we're going to see significant progress. And potentially, that might impact Congo, which is a neighboring country. So I'm highly optimistic, based on what I've seen in terms of the progress taking place in that country, that progress will continue to go.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think when you hear that, Joe?
It makes me feel very, very happy. And it just shows that it can work. It can spread. It can move from country to country, and that women can make a difference. And the men are screwing it up. Let's let the women do this.
Yeah.
And how do you decide who makes the decision, Judith, where you're going to be next? And are there a lot more places you'd like to be, but just you can't expand because you don't have the sponsors that you need?
Well, you know, not only the sponsors, because the sponsors actually, you know, it's about serving the women directly. We still need funding for, you know, infrastructure for office, and which is not something most donors want to pay, so we have to find the funding for it. Obviously, there's a lot of places we would like to be that we are not yet in. But at the same time, we've also had to make a strategic decision to try to enhance the quality of the program so that we can do less with greater impact, instead of trying to do more with less impact. The needs are massive. I mean, if you look at Northern Uganda, for example, the need in Northern Uganda are huge. There are other countries, there are other regions. The world is just marred by conflict. So there's a lot of places that we would love to be, that we, you know, would like to be, but the reality is we can't be everywhere where we are needed. So what we've been trying to do over the years is to be impactful and deliver a meaningful program where we are. And so in terms of who make the decision, it's an organizational decision with boards that decide whether or not the growth and the evolution of the organization where it is right now is the best place for us to move, or do we wait a while to see how we're doing? Because we've had to actually make sure that the women we are serving, that we are having a lasting mm-hmm. change in their lives. And those are very delicate decisions for an organization to decide in terms of, do you serve more with less impact, or do you have more impact by serving less?
Right. And how do you find the women, or how do the women who will be served find you?
We do community assessment. We work in partnership with local community leaders. We have a team on the ground when we do these community assessment that helps us to identify in collaboration with the community leaders and other partner organizations where the need is greatest. Sometimes it's partnering with a hospital where women are being served. Sometimes it's partnering with another organization that is serving rape survivors. But we have teams on the ground that are well-versed and understand the reality on the ground. For example, serving refugees, internally displaced persons, so that we are in those communities where the need is greatest. So we have, people who understand the reality that help us to identify the people with the greatest needs.
Mm-hmm. You must think about this every day, and Joe, you must think about this as well, Judith, thinking about it certainly when she's in the country. Doesn't it just knock you out how some people have these incredible obstacles they have to overcome just to live? Just to, you know, the luck of the draw here, where you were born and what was going on in the country and the impact of war and being a woman and all of that, it's so profound.
No, I could not agree with you more. And I look at my life, I travel extensively, and I look at my life in the U.S. and think about my ability to move. I mean, movement, we take that for granted, just our ability to actually walk out the street without needing permission, without needing an escort, or the ability to dress just by wearing what you are wearing. And I think, if for nothing else, I think we always have to remember the desires we have for ourselves and for our lives. It's a universal desire to actually live well and be well. And, you know, to be a woman in this world and too many parts of the world, whether you're talking about trafficking of women, whether you're talking about conflict and rape, it's really, really, it's a sad thing. But I think within that same breath of saying it's really sad to be a woman, there are great opportunities. And I think we, as women globally, those with the opportunities to make a change and have an impact, we can do that. And we've done that historically, and we have to constantly look back and sort of say, regardless of what it is now, it could be worse, and we can make it better. And we have to constantly focus on the possibilities, not just on the obstacles.
Joe, you want to weigh in on that?
Well, one of the things I was thinking about is that in addition to making the life better for the women and giving them a future, their focus very often is on making a better place for their children.
Yes.
And in many cases, they are taking care of children from extended family because there's no one there. You know, I can't remember whether the woman in Iraq that I'm sponsoring now, she has 7 children. I'm not sure that they are all hers. In other words, they could be children, nieces and nephews. They could be children she's taken in. That has been the case in other sisters that I've sponsored. So, you know, they are trying to make a better world, and that just blows my mind that in the face of all this hardship and fear and inability to be able, as Judith says, to walk out on the street without permission,
right?
Their thoughts are there. Their thoughts are where our thoughts are. We need to make a better world.
You know, to add to what Joe is saying, you know, one of the things that happened in Rwanda was that the women were adopting, taking on children, regardless of ethnicity, to put the country back together. And you see what she's describing constantly. I know I've seen it. The women will say they have 5, 6 kids. Many of them are not theirs. And there is that strong sense of responsibility. And I think when we think about it, and I'm always reminded of this woman whenever I interview women, I'm always asking them question, what do you want for yourself? Because I really want to understand what is that sense of self across different cultures. And I would ask women that question in 500 different ways, what do you want for yourself? Reoccurring consistently, it's about the kids, it's about the family, it's about never about them individually, but always about my children having a better quality of life.
Yes.
And I think to reinforce Joe's point, there, if nothing else, we think about why we do what we do on different ends is the possibilities for a next generation. And they'll tell you, you know, I remember meeting with a woman in Sudan telling me, like, you know, for me, it's really over. But I believe that, you know, if I can do this for my kids.
Right. And on that note, we must end. Thank you both so much for being with us. Judith Registe joining us. And we also thank Joe Schmidt. Women for Women is the name of the organization. The website is womenforwomen.org. And it'll be on our Facebook page, too, The Kathleen Dunn Show. Thanks to Chrissy Pease for producing the program, to Rhonda Fanning for on-air producing here in Milwaukee.